The Best of Our Knowledge explores topics on learning, education, and research. Coming up, the future of journalism in America could be in the hands of students. On today's program, we'll learn about the students and faculty at Stony Brook University who have created a resilience toolkit for student journalists. And we'll learn about a national initiative to expand local news coverage through academic partnerships. I'm Lucas Willard, host of The Best of Our Knowledge. You're listening to The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Lucas Willard. In an era of news deserts, social media algorithms, and artificial intelligence, journalism is a valuable commodity. Amid campus protests across the country this past year, student newspapers, radio, and television stations covered the stories that some traditional media outlets could not. Reporting can be a demanding, stressful job. A new effort from journalism students and recent graduates at Stony Brook University has developed a sort of survival guide for less experienced writers and broadcasters. To learn more about the toolkit, called Coping with Crisis, Journalists on the Front Line, I spoke with Class of 2024 graduate Raphael Cruvenel and Sarah Baxter, director of the Marie Colvin Center for International Reporting at Stony Brook University. We begin with Raphael, who recalls the February 2022 Russian invasion of Ukraine and the pressure he felt when attempting to cover the story.
I just felt extremely overwhelmed, and I remember that I walked in and I sat on the floor of the studio and I just simply could not move. And I remember this was a class that I was taking with many of my friends. Two of my friends were producing the show. One of my friends was writing scripts for the show, and I was just sitting on the floor. I did not do anything on that show. I did not do anything because I physically could not move because of how nervous I got and how overwhelmed I got. I also think it's good to note that I'm generally more of a print person than a broadcast person. So maybe if this experience had been on print, I would have been able to handle it better. But what matters is that it wasn't on print, it was on broadcast, and that's what happened. Yeah, you know, I'm not working with what ifs, I'm working with what happened, and that's what happened. And yeah, I think the best way to describe it is that I felt overwhelmed and I couldn't really do anything. And I was just sitting on the floor watching the newsroom move around me, but without any reaction.
And Professor Baxter, as somebody who works with journalism students, how common is Raphael's story to you with students who they get a big story or a big world event happens and they're just simply overwhelmed and they don't know where to start?
Oh, I think it happens a lot. And one thing I should say, we started this program last fall. And what nobody expected then was that you were going to have the Israel-Gaza war unfold, one in which students got very wrapped up in campus protests, but also where there was a lot of anger on both sides and difficulty about how to cover it. And one of the things that we spoke to was to student colleagues of Raphael, who were, for example, editing their publications, who were saying, well, even the New York Times was flubbing their coverage and getting a lot of criticism for whether they were too sympathetic to the Israelis or too sympathetic to the Palestinians. How were we as students supposed to navigate through those hurdles? So there are a lot of these huge pressure points that can spring up out of nowhere. I mean, another subject that we looked into was covering shootings. Well, we spoke to students from the Daily Tar Heel in the University of North Carolina, where they had an active shooter event on campus and had to report on that as students. But it also emerged in class that one of our students on this project had been an intern at NBC at the time of the Nashville shooting and was having to look at raw footage of young school students, young pupils coming in who had been massacred, that they were having to deal with interviewing survivors and trying to find contact numbers for people who are involved in that. And this student was 19 years old, and she said there was no way she felt adequately prepared for that. Perhaps nothing can properly prepare you for something as grave as that. But at the same time, I know that by speaking to professional journalists, by speaking to experts on trauma and trauma-informed reporting, we were able to come up with suggestions that I know the professional said, gosh, I wish there had been something like this when I was starting out in my career. And that's one of the most encouraging things that I heard.
So the toolkit itself, it's not just a handbook. There are illustrations. There are some videos embedded in there. There's a lot of ways to convey these tips and tricks and advice and to young people who are learning something new, something that's very challenging. So why was it, before we speak about maybe some of the specific steps themselves in the toolkit, why was the presentation and how it was put together being so accessible? Why was that so important? And Professor Baxter, you can touch on that, and Raphael as well.
Yes, well, this was something that we to give you a little background, we were very proud to be one of eight universities across the United States to win an award from the Solutions Journalism Network's Mental Health Challenge. And we put forward our case. Raphael helped me to make it, actually, since he was an early adopter of this scheme. And then we thought, well, now we've actually been accepted as one of the winners of this Student Mental Health Challenge, we actually have to go about doing it. So we started by asking the participants themselves, including Raphael and his colleagues, about their own experiences of trauma and stress. And then we took it from there, and we asked ourselves to think about journalists that we admired in different fields. Maybe they were crime reporters, maybe they were environment, climate reporters, maybe they were war correspondents. Who were your heroes? Who would you like to hear from? And let's go and talk to them about their experiences. Let's talk to people from places like the Dart Center for Trauma and Journalism. Let's talk to the Committee to Protect Journalists about their experience. And that was interesting because the Committee to Protect Journalists, which had begun as an organization devoted to protecting the physical well-being of journalists, found that they were increasingly called upon to deal with the mental well-being. But then we also looked at what resources we had in our group as a whole. And it turned out that we had a wonderful participant called Jane Montalto, who Raphael worked with very closely as a co-editor of the Student Press, The Press, a student publication at Stony Brook, who was a wonderful illustrator. And she volunteered. I didn't know this. She just said out of the blue, I would love to do illustrations for this survivor's guide. I love what you call it. And Jane turned out to be a very talented illustrator and gave it a friendly, accessible tone. It's not all doom and gloom. It is actually about self-care tips, what you can do to look after yourself, how you can work your way through problems, how you can talk to your boss, all these kind of positive suggestions for change. And having these lovely drawings by Jane, I thought really, really lifted the whole guide.
Absolutely. And Raphael, what do you think about how the guide itself is presented and all of the illustrations, the video? There's information pulled to the surface. It's not buried in a textbook. This is something that's very accessible. Why do you think that's effective as a recent graduate yourself?
Yeah, I'm very happy with how the toolkit was presented and the layout of it and how we were able to make it accessible. I think, first of all, as Professor Baxter was saying, I think that Jane's illustrations provided a lot of interesting elements to the toolkit. I think that they help to break a little bit from the overwhelmingness of the text. You know, if we had just text, just blocks of text, that I feel like would maybe be as overwhelming as the reporting itself was, you know, because obviously in that text, we are talking about very serious and heavy and traumatic parts of being a journalist. And I think that help having those drawings that they add a lighter mood to the toolkit and they make the experience of reading the toolkit lighter. So first of all, the drawings, of course, there is the multimedia, the videos, the images that we created, not that we created, but that we gathered. I mean, one of the videos we created, the first video, the introduction one. But you know, generally the videos and the images, I think they add, because I don't know a lot about education, but what I do know about education is that not everyone learns only with text. You know, for some people having video helps, for some people having images helps. So obviously it is very important that we have those there. But I think one of the most important things about the toolkit, and one of the things that I like the most, is that it is in an online platform that everyone can access from pretty much the whole world. You know, I think that if I were in Brazil, if I were a college student in Brazil learning journalism in Brazil, I would be able to access this toolkit. And that's what I think is very important, because we're not creating a toolkit only for Stony Brook students. We're not creating a toolkit only for New York students. We're not creating a toolkit only for US students. We're creating a toolkit for journalists as a whole, all over the world. And even the sources that we used in the toolkit reflect that. We didn't only interview people who are based in the US. We interviewed people all over the place. And having that in an online platform that c everyone can access obviously makes the toolkit a global range kind of material.
One of the wonderful things is that I'm speaking to you now while hosting a 2-day Solutions Journalism Educators Academy, which is bringing together, through the auspices of the Solutions Journalism Network, professors of journalism from all over the country, all over the United States. We have people here from California, from Tennessee, from Illinois, from Pennsylvania, and they're all here to learn. And tomorrow I will be presenting our guide. And I'm very hopeful and encouraged by the thought that they'll be taking it back to their schools of journalism throughout the country and showing it and using it. I mean, it's kind of news you can use. We deliberately went for a friendly, accessible format. I love the video that the editor of the student publication Black World produced, a student called Tumiche, who produced a guide to how he uses Minecraft to solve the problems of his stress. And he said, whatever, you know, you're feeling stressed by deadlines or by traumatic events, you know, just go at it. You've got your, you know, shoot your way through these problems online. You'll feel better for it. And I felt that was very, very appealing to a younger audience. I mean, you know, something that I would have related to as a student that perhaps doesn't mean so much to me now, but I just loved it.
I was just looking at it. The student says, if you're a journalist and you feel you have a heavy workload, you should just act like you're in Minecraft. Look at this guy. I press this button and he starts mining. He doesn't say, "Oh my God, I'm tired," is how he put it. But looking
Good
at
advice.
the tips and what is in the toolkit itself, these are heavy subjects. There is advice on covering mass shootings. There's advice on covering student protests. And at the core of this toolkit, there was a student questionnaire where students were asked about their experiences in reporting on serious subject matter, like deaths, like rape. And a lot of students were not prepared for some of these heavy, real-world problems that journalists in the working world encounter on a regular basis. Why was a student questionnaire and finding out where students were in their experience so important to developing this toolkit?
Well, first of all, I think the questionnaire just revealed what we were already beginning to understand, which is that students are expected to report on very heavy issues without actually really understanding when they become journalism students that that's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to talk to bereaved parents. You know, perhaps they're doing a subject on CTE and football. They might have to talk to a bereaved parent. How do they cope with that? And how do they cope with that feeling after they've gone and got somebody else to tell them about their traumatic experience? Do they just bury that and move on to the next story? And one of the things that we concentrated on quite a lot in our looking for solutions to this issue is how to conduct interviews in a trauma-informed way so that you can feel that you have behaved ethically, that you have treated your sources with respect, not as victims, but as survivors, and that you can, so that you don't come away feeling bad about yourself or fearing that you have re-traumatized people by speaking to them. Because often people who have been through traumatic events want to tell their stories, but they don't want to feel used and thrown away by a journalist and left with all that bad feeling. So ethical reporting, I think, is at the heart of feeling good about what we do. So we've come up with a guide to trauma-informed reporting as part of the toolkit that I think people will find very invaluable. But then the other thing is, well, what impact does trauma have on your brain? What is the science of trauma? Can you understand better why your response is as it is? And Raphael, in fact, went to speak to a psychiatrist at Stony Brook who herself had grown up during the Lebanese Civil War, so understood very well what trauma was, to talk about the science of the brain and how we can be subject to stresses we don't even understand and how they can come out in unexpected ways and catch you by surprise. So that was very important as well. And then we moved on to different people's solutions, how they might read novels, take a break, meditate, take a moment even for a prayer, and all those different sort of skills. So this was really what first we needed to find out the extent of the problem, and that was the questionnaire, and then what we can do about it, which was offering solutions. By the way, one of the interesting findings in the questionnaire was that young journalist students of color had experienced reporting on more traumatic events or themselves had experienced trauma as journalists. And that's something to bear in mind because one of the topics that we looked at in some depth was both reporting on issues of discrimination, whether it be racism, ableism, homophobia, etc., but also the pressures that are placed on journalists from those from marginalized communities to somehow represent their community in total, a pressure that white journalists often don't face, and or able-bodied journalists or straight journalists. And so trying to look at how much pressure is placed on journalists from marginalized communities was an important part of our work.
Raphael, is there anything in the toolkit that you find particularly helpful or something that you were very pleased to see included in there?
I'm going to start with the second one, something that I felt particularly happy to have included there, which was in the discrimination part. We included a brief section on disability reporting. Reporting on disabilities and the experiences of disabled journalists. And I was very happy to include that because I think that disabled people don't get as much media attention as they should. And when they do, it's not in a way that is very positive for them. So I was happy that we were able to include that group in the toolkit. And something that I found particularly helpful, well, there's a lot, but I have to think in order to mention just one. I guess I'm going to say something that Christina Lamb said. Christina Lamb is the chief foreign correspondent for the Sunday Times. And something that she said that I found particularly helpful was that she reads novels a lot, and she distracts her mind by doing that. And I found that helpful because, I also read a lot of novels, and it was good to see that I'm not the only one who does that as a form of distraction. I think it was kind of emphasizing what I already knew, but in a very positive way. I did that. I've always been a big reader, but it was very recently that I started seeing reading as this mental health aid, and seeing that there is other journalists who do that motivated me even more to continue reading.
Yes, Christina Lamb, who's a very distinguished expert on rape as a weapon of war. So she has really seen a lot of trauma. Also was very helpful in our section on how to talk to your boss, because she said, if you break a leg, you wouldn't have any problem going to talk to your boss and saying, I'm injured. I can't do this reporting right now. But there's a lot of stigma attached to going and saying to your boss, I've covered war after war after war. I mean, we've got reporters now in the field who have, in the past 12 months, been covering the Israel-Gaza conflict, the Ukraine conflict. We had someone speaking to a panel that we organized who, on top of all that, had also covered the Turkish earthquake because she was based in Istanbul. That's all within 12 months. What's wrong with going to your editor and saying, I need respite, I need a break? And as Christina said, you do that if you've broken your leg. Do that when you feel that you are mentally injured or need just some kind of step back.
Raphael Cruvenel is a class of 2024 graduate at Stony Brook University. Sarah Baxter is director of the Marie Colvin Center for International Reporting at Stony Brook University. The toolkit for student journalists is called Coping with Crisis, Journalists on the Front Line. You're listening to The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Lucas Willard. More than half of U.S. counties are news deserts, meaning they have no or limited access to local news. That's according to researchers at Northwestern University. But a unique program at the University of Vermont hopes to change that. UVM's Center for Community News was launched in 2019 to strengthen local news coverage with student reports. Through partnerships across Vermont, student reporters are matched with editors to provide coverage of communities in need of local reporting. And the idea is catching on. As the Best of Our Knowledge's Pat Bradley reports, the program has received $7 million in funding to expand nationwide.
In 2019, UVM created an internship program for students to learn local news reporting in Vermont. It has now expanded, and the Center for Community News' new goal is to enhance local news reporting in areas across the country lacking local news. Center Managing Director Meg Little Riley said the initial program began as an experiment. They then began researching what other schools were doing to get student reporters to cover local news and found an opportunity to create a national program.
There seemed to be quite a few of them, but they were all working in relative isolation. As newsrooms have been hollowed out over the last 20 years in the United States, student reporting is very quietly stepping up to cover really critical beats, things like statehouse coverage and courthouses, things like that. So we recognize an opportunity here for coordination and collaboration, and also to advocate for the entire field. And that's how this nationally facing Center for Community News was born.
Charlotte Oliver is about to start her senior year at UVM. The global studies major has been participating in the program since last September. She says not only does she get experience, she is helping local news outlets.
I think it's cool that we get to cover things that other statewide or local media sources don't really have the resources to cover. Like something that seems pretty important happens in a town and it gets no media coverage. Or if there's just like bigger statewide things that kind of go unnoticed or unreported on, it seems really rewarding to get to know the people in the community. And it's pretty fun.
The UVM Center for Community News is getting $7 million from several sources, including the Knight Foundation and the MacArthur Foundation, to be a part of its Press Forward initiative, a national project to revitalize local news, saying it will strengthen democracy. Again, Riley.
There has definitely been a tide change in our awareness of the importance of local news. You know, local news is by definition serving most of us from a less political place, right? Because it's about what's going on where you live. It's about how the potholes are getting filled and, you know, which roads the plow is going to get to first. So it's just more pragmatic. And one of the things we know from current media studies is that when local newspapers disappear, people's media diets shift to more national news consumption, which tends to be more partisan. And local news is a counterweight to that.
Oliver says the longer she participates in the program, the clearer it becomes how big a problem the diminishment of local newsrooms has become.
Talking to a couple editors of local papers, it really shocked me to hear how small a lot of their newsrooms are and how, like, they just don't have a lot of resources. And it's really frightening because news is really important and local news is really important for people to understand what's going on in their community. Most of what affects people day to day is what's happening in their community and what their local government is doing, things like that. The problems with local news being under resources is really a big problem that I think should scare more people.
The Center for Community News is the first organization in the country working to create news and academic partnerships to fill voids in local news operations. Reporting for The Best of Our Knowledge, I'm Pat Bradley.
This has been The Best of Our Knowledge, episode 1765. The Best of Our Knowledge is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Thanks to associate producer Jody Cowan, the latest on all national productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter and our flagship station's website, WAMC.org. Until next time, I'm Lucas Willard.